Hi everyone, welcome to Journeys with PDA Coffee Chat podcast, where we seek connection, community, and co-regulation while discussing all things PDA. Hey there, this is Heather from Journeys with PDA. Just wanted to give you a heads up for this episode. Sometimes we talk about tough stuff, and this is one of those episodes where we are going to be discussing some pretty serious topics. Sometimes those topics can be triggering to some people. They can be very difficult to listen to. One of the more difficult things that usually comes up when we put these trigger warnings out there is the talk and the discussion around suicide and suicide ideation. So we just want you to make sure that you are taking care of yourself when you start listening to this particular episode. And if you feel like you need to seek out mental health support, we encourage you to do so. Thank you very much. Yeah. Parental shame. The last time we talked, you said something, and it was one of the, it was just brilliant. It was our PDA, and I'm going to paraphrase you, our PDAers make us parent them the way they need to be parented.
Yes.
Yeah. Carissa and I were in an autism summit last week. We did a little presentation on PDA, and I actually brought your quote up during our things. Like, you know, our PDAers are going to make us parent the way they need to be parented. And it is 180 degrees from the way the Western society, the Western civilization tells us we should parent our children.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think this is a great shift into talking about parental shame. Mm-hmm. We get that a lot with the families that we work with. It's, you know, usually it's grandparents, usually it's extended family. However, once you get past that, there are times that, you know, you have to access going out, you know, our children. Right. And it is. And it's kind of like you set up this very safe place in your home where your family can thrive. But then there are times you have to go out and you have to exist in the world where it's like, you don't have time to explain things to people. You know, you've got to get in, you've got to get out, you've got to do this, and it's like, it's really, really difficult to come to grips with saying, screw what everybody else is thinking. And I have to parent my child the way they need to be parented.
Yeah. Yeah. I had a very, very difficult situation just a couple of weeks ago with the dentist. And for anybody who is not watching, I've got squishies in both hands now as I'm thinking about it, trying to. I mean, we do the best we can, and we make choices that other people don't have to make. Mm-hmm. And this is like, it directly ties into bedtime. Oh my gosh, we had such a difficult period with our kids. We just moved again. So we'd moved somewhere completely different 2 years ago. My eldest child was not able to leave the house for a couple of months. All hell was breaking loose at home. My youngest, who we had decided to homeschool because it was like just continuing on from the pandemic. Mm-hmm. And we thought, hey, we've just moved. Let's just settle in first, then think about school. We didn't even know we actually thought he was neurotypical at this point because he just presents so differently to my eldest, right? And oh my goodness me, the fights, the meltdowns. It ended up that he was just screaming and shouting and breaking everything. And it's not just he does that in his own space, but we were all getting hurt and all of our nervous systems were like alive with keep me safe. And he asked to go to school because he hated us so much. So after a bit, we were like, okay, we will try that if you need to. We tried school. We thought everything was fine. No, it wasn't. The school didn't know that he could read and he could write and he was actually really clever. They thought that he didn't speak much. And then his next teacher thought that he was mute and they didn't know any. And he's a boy who he taught himself to read. He taught himself math like at a very young age when he was being neglected, because like I was looking after his older children who needed complete one-to-one 24/7. Sorry, I didn't neglect him.
You're in survival mode. You are in survival mode. And it's like you, if you have one child, and I just have a single child, but I can imagine if you have one child who seems to be, they are surviving on their own. They are, and you are, so, and all of your energy is going towards the other one. I completely see that and understand that.
That was our situation too, because I have two children and it was like, it took a lot of focus and a lot of energy on my older child. And talking about parental shame.
Yeah, exactly.
It's the parental shame that makes me feel as if there was a period of time that I neglected my other child. That's my parental shame. That's shame put on me. And I think it's because I wanted to do more. But in order for our entire family to survive, and I know that that sounds like so dramatic when we're talking about
true. Right.
It's absolutely true that you do whatever you can to help your family survive, and that child that's in crisis.
Yeah.
And they're so hurting and they're so distraught. Yeah. Like you have to address that issue. And
to put it into perspective, my youngest was suicidal. I'm not talking like you look at like the next best thing, and like the next best thing would be that he was like kicking the crap out of me and my husband.
Right.
Like
no.
I would have taken anything for him to stop taking it out on himself. And that's what we were dealing with. And it would like, as it does, right. It escalates through the day as we get more tired, as we take more on, as we have more interactions, all this type of thing, we get to bedtime. And everybody is done. And we had such a low demand bedtime. And the times when we did try to like enforce things like brushing teeth, I mean, like we never even bothered with getting changed because it was clearly like a too much. It was a too much thing. I wouldn't, if you want to sleep in your jeans and a sweater, that's okay. That's okay. Let's just try and make sure you don't get too hot. That's fine. Toothbrushing was one of those things that was just too inaccessible for him. We later found out that he has like real bad, like sensory issues around that. But he was just so bright that he would like, I want to say mask, but really like reason out of everything. And so we had no idea. But without making this into too long of a story that I would love to pull my heart out to, but basically we didn't go to the dentist for 2 years, and that was because we moved. Like I know that for a lot of people that isn't a lot of time, by the way, and I'm not like saying that's so long. I know that sometimes the dentist is just inaccessible for many, many years. But we went to the dentist just before we moved. My kids both fine, no work needed doing, had x-rays done, nothing, all great. And they never had any cavities. And then in that 2 years, we had so much stress and toothbrushing went down. Anyway, we finally got to the point that we like put it back on the radar needing to go to the dentist. We went there, and first off, it was the hygienist. And she was like, oh, yeah, there's like a few needs doing. Let's take some x-rays. And then she's like, yeah, there's quite a bit needs doing. And I'm there like panicking and I'm texting my husband like, oh, my God, there's loads of work doing. I'm so scared. I'm so sad. I feel terrible, right? I feel absolutely awful. Part of this is my own story around my teeth in that I've never, ever had any issues with my teeth, never had any cavities. I have freakishly strong teeth. And so like I have this inbuilt part of me that's like, I must have been so neglectful to his teeth for it to have any issues. So the dentist comes in and he comes in a huff and a puff. And then he just like flies to the screen with the x-rays. And he says, you cannot poo-poo, or this was his words, you cannot poo-poo around brushing his teeth. That's how he came into me with. And I was like, oh, because I was already, feeling very stressed. And then to be faced with that, I was like, I was shocked. And I was like, so I first off, like, and then, I mean, like, I remember trying to say something, but then he was just like talking over me and I can't really entirely remember because I was stressed. And it was basically along the lines of, apparently he could tell that my son had never, ever had a floss going between it. That's a lie. Like, he was mistaken. Yes, my son has had a floss go between his teeth. Like he used to sit there with a floss and like basically ram his gums until they bled. Like he has. And he was acting like he was angry that I had neglected my child. That's how it felt. It felt like he was responding to somebody who was abusing their child. Like that's how it felt to me. And I tried to explain to him. I just like took a breath and I calmly said, my son has pathological demand avoidance. It's an autonomic nervous system disability. And it means that any kind of demands or expectations that are placed in him can have a fight or flight stress response to them. And so sometimes he doesn't have his teeth cleaned. And then, so then he starts with, I have children and I know what it's like to try and brush a child's teeth, but you just have to do it. And then he's like, you can't be jabbing around his mouth with a toothbrush. You've got to make it into a game. And like, I'm just, so at that point, I'm like, I said my son's name. And I said, do you want to go and play outside? And then this dentist, for about 50 minutes, he should have been in there for just a few minutes because he should have said, we can't do this work here. He needs to be referred to a pediatric dentist. And he wasn't able to give any more information because the way that any dentist might deal with things could be different, like depending on who it is. That was all he needed to say. But instead he went off for 50 minutes about how my child must be in quote unquote excruciating pain and that his mouth was like a house that is burning down. And we desperately have to put out the flame. This is how he said, we desperately have to put out the flames to be able to save anything that is there. And he is giving me this horrendous news. And I am crying. Like I'm there, like literally crying. And then he goes like, oh, before you start that, as in like me crying. And he's just having another go. So. That was how that went. So I would love to swear and call him all the words, but It's your podcast, so I won't. And then I went home and I had a good cry. And then I was left with this feeling of, I am a neglectful mother because I didn't do all the things. I didn't protect him as I needed to do. I didn't do my job. I must find a way that I can make him have his teeth cleaned. I didn't see options. I saw the only choices as he has his teeth cleaned or he doesn't have his teeth cleaned. And that, like, have his teeth cleaned was that it was going to be, so either I break my relationship with my son or I completely neglect him. And I was scared too, because I'm in the field and I know the stories and I've read the reports and I know that people get, you know, social services get involved. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh my God. But I mean, luckily for us, we were at the point where we just had a fantastic assessment done. And in it, they said about how, like, his emotional dysregulation and, like, various things are on, like, the severe end and various things. So I actually have things in writing from professionals to say that, like, he has a lot of needs. But actually, like, it could have been just, like, 2 or 3 months prior and I wouldn't have had that. I had a lot of conversations with people after this as I was trying to, I don't know, offload, vent, try and figure out things.
I think it's such a difficult situation because you were in a burnout situation, you were in a crisis situation, you were in a survival situation. And so we're talking, you know, like Heather mentioned, it's so difficult when we have to go kind of like out into the world. And so maybe that, like, that is a dentist, like a hairstylist, you know, because hair can be really, really difficult as well. Yeah. And so when you have to kind of go out, into the world and you're interacting with people who do not know the stress and the trials that you're under, and you know, for example, like this dentist saying like, oh, well, I have children.
You're Carissa, like, can I tell you, know, like, you something?
Yes.
I'm so sorry to interrupt. Can I just tell you something? I went onto his website. I don't know. I was just ruminating. And I went onto his website and I read his bio. And on his bio, it said about how he has 3 little girls that he really enjoys playing tea parties with and teaching to ski. And I was like, oh, F you. I was like, oh, because he really didn't know, like, if he has children that he can, like, sit down and, like, you know, just, like, charmingly play these cute little games and, like, go and teach them to ski. Well, you know what? I would love to go and, like, do that, do a trip to the local mountain, right? Mm-hmm. One, get my child into a car with all of that outdoor gear available. No, they have such sensory issues that they cannot put on a lot of, like, winter gear because the sounds of the fabric, right? To then go up and, like, even, like, teaching to ski, like, no, my children will either decide that they are going to do something and then they'll figure out how to do it themselves because that's just, like, how they learn, or we will have, like, a massive showdown and no one gets taught anything, but, like, I will feel like, well, I tried to tell them how to ski, but essentially that's like telling them to do something, right? Trying to make them do something. And I was just so like, yes. No, you haven't got a single clue. Not a single clue. And it's like, so I can, like, right, to finish that story, my second son, my oldest son, so you think, like, 3 years worth more of neglecting his teeth, right? So he's 3 years older, and actually his oral hygiene is worse. and he has a sugar sweet tooth that my youngest doesn't have. He went to the dentist and came back, and there was nothing that needed doing. And he's still like no cavities, like nothing. So that puts it into a little bit of perspective there. Now, what that dentist did was, on so many different levels. One, he made it so that I feel like, we had us all booked in there. We're moving dentists. There's no way. I now am fearful about going to the dentist for myself. I don't know what it is. Like my kids will go, I just don't want to. I just can't face it. Because not only are they going to see, first off, like it's very vulnerable, surely, like to have someone poking around inside your mouth. Secondly, I don't want my personal details, because they take your history, don't they? They take your history. They take like any like pharmaceuticals that you're on and stuff like that. I don't want them to know that I am neurodivergent. I don't want them to know that I am on any pharmaceuticals, because I worry because of that one dentist's approach. If I would have like, I feel like it would have been even worse if he had any inkling that like I was on like SSRIs or ADHD medication. Would he have seen that and gone and you know, painted a picture on me, which is highly inaccurate, but like we go about like social profiling, right? They have all the information there. Then, he's made it so that I am going to feel like I can't access care for myself, or at least not with the same dentist that I will for my child. And he has made it so that I'm going to try my hardest. Like my son is going to need to have a lot of work done. And it's so funny because the more that I speak to about it, the more that I realize how actually common this is. Like I had no, like, because I've had like freakishly great teeth, right? I just didn't know how common it is for kids to have fillings and kids to have teeth pulled. Yeah. I just didn't. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was like almost extreme because I was sheltered in that conversation. But also he had made it out to be something horrendous. And my son isn't in a lot of pain. I've asked him so many times, he's like, no, I'm fine. Yeah, totally fine. And we're there like brushing his teeth and I'm like poking the ones and we're like flossing around the ones that are like, you know, that they are. So there's one that it's basically like, it's down to the root and it just needs to come out. And we're like flossing around it and brushing it and all this type of stuff. And I'm like, is that okay? He's like, yeah, totally. And he's like, he's taking the floss off me and ramming it down. And I'm, oh. But anyway, but he totally made me feel like I was an inadequate caregiver. And of course, like any medical stuff is highly emotive anyway, right? Like right. It's, even if he was giving me good news, I was still going to have some kind of like emotional response to it. People don't show up because they're neglectful people. I showed up to the dentist. It wasn't like as though it like it finally got to the stage where he was screaming in agony 24/7. And I was like, oh God, I better take you to ER. No, I took him to the dentist for a checkup. I'm showing up like as I needed to. And it just comes down to back to this, like we make choices. We have to choose between things that for other parents are not even choices. They can have everything. They can have a child that like you go, oh, it's time to go and brush your teeth, and they'll go off and they'll brush their teeth and they'll go off and they'll get dressed and they'll do everything and then they'll go in their room and they'll shut the door and they'll like open a book and read, and then you pop in like 15 minutes later and you go, oh, lights out. Okay, daddy, I love you. Bye. Wouldn't that be a dream? Like
having perfect little tea parties.
Yeah,
I think there needs to be more training for medical yes. professionals and the peripheries yes. or the adjacent there just needs to be more training and more Krista,
and that is what that's what we're doing right now is we want to acknowledge this really, really difficult situation. We want to acknowledge the parental shame that we experience because we are in survival mode and we're doing the best that we can. And, you know, I think so many of us go to bed at night wishing that we had done better that day, but we really just did all that we can. And so I think that it's so vital for one, parents to know that when they have this experience. And Suzanne, I'm so incredibly grateful that you would share something so hard and so difficult because
and
other people need to know that they are not the only ones living that experience. They're not the only ones dealing with this shame and the guilt and the weight of all of trying to survive and having to make the choice between, am I going to have a 2-hour meltdown? Which, by the way, for a child to live out a 2-hour meltdown, that's incredibly painful for them. Like, that might be hard for mama. A mama doesn't enjoy it, but like, keep in mind how incredibly painful it is for the child to be in that position and the hurt that they're going through. So do you have to choose between, am I going to have my child go through that kind of pain? Because that is pain and discomfort and distress. Do I want to have them experience that so that they'll brush their teeth? And not all parents are having to make that choice. And that was us. Do we have a gigantic meltdown over teeth brushing, or do we let teeth brushing go so that everybody can actually have a peaceful sleep? And I had to make that choice, and I made that choice knowing that there are repercussions and there's consequences of having to choose that. I know that. And that might mean we're going to have extensive dental work. But you know, I'm stuck between a rock and a hard place in those choices. Also, I think it's so incredibly important for educators, mental health professionals, and medical providers to understand the very difficult choices that have to be made in caring for these really, really special neurodivergent, out-of-the-box, way different kids. And I'm really, really sad that you had to have that experience. And there's so much advocating and educating that we have to do. So not only do we have to try and support our children in going out and having these tasks, but then we're also put in the position of advocate and educator with the person that we're coming into contact with. And I know that, like, if we're going to have a medical appointment or dental or whatever, I gotta get like all my advocator like stuff lined out and like make the pre-phone calls and you know, and sometimes you can supply information and you can make those phone calls and the info isn't passed on and you can still have a rough experience.
I made the phone calls first, even before I even booked in. I was like, this is the situation. I need you to be good with kids.
You can try. But I also think that as we experience that deep shame and that deep regret, as a parent, we need to step back and go, you know, I'm going to make mistakes. But am I still doing the absolute best that I can? And then, you know, you're going to have to come to a point where you go, all right, maybe I do need to shift priorities. And, you know, maybe it's time for that one thing to get higher up on our PDA non-negotiable list. And you know, and if you're going to press that one thing, so maybe it's teeth brushing, you know, you're going to have to drop something else. That is really, that's really challenging. That's really difficult. And again, I just appreciate you so very much for sharing that story, because we all needed to hear that.
I feel like as I say it, I'm very aware of my privilege with this, because I am showing up as someone who is white, who is middle class, who doesn't appear to, you know, people who don't know, as neurodivergent or like in any way disabled. I had everything going for me except for the fact that I'm not a man. And like, so I'm fully aware, like, that when I tell this story, I am not coming from it with such a level of vulnerability as many, many people are. And the bit that I want to go back to is that whole toothbrushing thing was, it was let go of because, and it's not that, and that's the other, I mean, like, it's not like we completely let it go and he didn't brush his teeth for months on end. Yeah, he did. He did. He brushed his teeth a lot, actually. It's just, and actually, my husband has really terrible sleep, and I was speaking to a friend of mine, and we were really talking on a deep dive on a very pragmatic level about, like, cellular differences between neurodivergent people and how we have so many co-occurring differences due to various things. And many times part of those, like, co-occurring differences is like a difference in the enamel, like whether we have like shallow, like thin enamel or like soft enamel or porous enamel, and maybe that's it. And maybe part of my neurodivergence is that I have really strong teeth. I made those choices because I decided that, meltdowns are really hard. And it's not just that one isolated thing. If we had really fought every single night about making him brush his teeth, that would have accumulated over time. Of course it would. And it would have led to damage within our relationship that I was aware of the damage that it could cause to a relationship. And I didn't feel that that was a, you know, with the choice, I made the choice of like my relationship. And not only just the relationship, but enable to like lower the demands and expectations around that very like sensory experience, that very vulnerable sensory experience of brushing his teeth. I released him from that, which enabled him to do so much more.
Right, right.
And it enabled him to be able to show up differently in the day and have different daytime experiences than he would have. And when he looks back, when he is older, I would rather him look back with a mouth full of permanent fixtures, because all of his teeth have gone, and for him to have had that experience being part of his path, part of his journey, than to look back and have like, oh, my mother was awful. We were shouting all the time. I was going through so much, but she still made me do X, Y, and Z. And especially because of what I do, it's not just like she didn't know. It would be like she knew.
She knew, and she did it anyway.
And she still did it, because apparently looking good with like pearly white teeth is better than my health, my happiness, and my relationship with her. Like, we can replace his teeth. We'll sell the house and replace his teeth if that is what it comes to. I cannot replace my son.
Right. And or the relationship. with your son. Yeah, absolutely. No, absolutely.
And it's kind of like, I know it's almost, I feel like it's within my lineage to, we've had so many mental health implications within my lineage. And it's not just that, like, my eldest child has had like suicidal ideations. Like, it's been in the family, and it's a very real, possibility. And when I say I cannot replace my son, I don't just mean, excuse me, I'm having a few tears here. I don't just mean like I cannot replace the relationship with him. Like, when we have like depression, anxiety, mental health issues that are, you know, impactful on our lives, it changes us.
Yes.
As people.
Yes.
So even if it didn't go as hard down the lines as, like, you know, suicide, it changes who you are. And my son is a fabulous, wonderful person. And he is so funny, and he is so creative, and he is my joy. I still like coming to terms whether or not this is like kind of like okay to say this between my two kids. My oldest is my pride. I am so proud of him. He has gone through such like deep, deep experiences. And I am so proud of him. My youngest is my joy. And I mean, I'm both like proud and joyful for the two of them, but they like, that's the big, big things. And if I can't replace him,
no,
I can't. I can replace all these
teeth. And it truly is a matter of teeth versus, and this is not this is not being dramatic, and this is not Heather being the most, you know, hyperbolic here. Like, it is truly, it comes down to the choices that we make. Do we force our children to brush their teeth at the expense of possibly having them try to commit suicide? And people don't see that. People do not understand that every single decision that we make as a PDA parent is about supporting their mental health.
Yeah.
Because, you know, because we know what the consequences could be on the other side of that. Mm. So this is such an important conversation to have, and we are so grateful that you're willing to have this conversation with us.
I'm so grateful for you giving us stage.
absolutely. We're so thankful. And, you know, we hope that anybody who is out there, first of all, if you or one of your children or one of your family members, you know, are at that point where they are in that type of mental distress, we highly, highly, highly have to say, you know, you need to contact a medical provider. That is first and foremost. But if you are sitting with us in this space and you are having, you know, this is what your life is, know that you are not alone. You can always contact, you know, us. We, you know, Journeys with PDA, we offer very safe spaces for parents to decompress from this and to have support with this. We have a website, journeyswithpda.com. You can reach us by email, journeyswithpda@gmail.com. You know, please reach out to a medical professional or, you know, if you need some help navigating some things, please reach out to Journeys, and we will do what we absolutely can to point you in the right direction. And Suzanne, do you want to give out your contact information as well?
Yeah, sure. So my website, which on the website there are links to, if you go under services, so my website is Motherload. I can't remember it now.
The motherload.nd.sleep.
That's my Instagram.
Okay.
We will make
but
sure.
Let me just, that while I find it, linked. I will tell you. So it's motherloadsleepspecialist.com.
Okay. And we'll link everything to in the
their end of services, if you scroll to the bottom, there is, you have access to my calendar where there is a free, the option to have like a free meet with me if you just need to speak to somebody. Okay. There is that. And I should have it on there, but I don't, but I will put it on there. Links to mental health crisis lines. I highly recommend that because obviously, like, you know, whoever can speak English in the world can read this. So, sorry, can listen to this, but like going and finding your local mental health crisis team line. I know that sometimes there are people that can come to your home. So if there are, what are they called? I feel like they come in like a, I was speaking with someone who has a PDA non-24 child, deep in burnout. And they realized that there was a crisis team who actually come with.
Yeah. They come with like,
I want to say like a box on wheels.
It's becoming more and more, I don't want to say the word popular, but that's happening more and more in the United States as well, where you have a crisis prevention person that comes, that can come into the home as well. So,
and they are fantastic. And sorry, go on.
No. Sometimes it gets laggy.
I'm so sorry. I just want to say as well, if you are here and you are like, oh, my child has PDA, is this what the future holds? No, that doesn't have to be the case at all. And quite often, it certainly seems like the reason that it gets so deep is because we don't know that our children have PDA, and we're trying to parent how we are being guided to parent by people who have no idea about PDA. And so if you already know that your child has PDA, and you haven't got to this point and you are worried that at some point it will, please don't feel like it is almost like a rite of passage that everybody goes through this. No, they don't. And I'm sure that there are people out there with, you know, PDA who haven't had, like, adult PDAs who haven't had this like type of experience in their lifetime. It's just the luck of the draw. It's the luck of the draw with like the type of parenting you have, the lineage that you have inherited, like the people around you, like what kind of supports that you have, all the type of thing. Just because it is an experience that many parents have doesn't mean to say it's going to be you. Not at all. And part of the reason, like, I'm always a little bit like, do I go into how difficult it can be, because I don't want to scare anybody. But at the same time, I went into that situation with the dentist, and I also went into very similar situations with teachers. But I had heard other people's stories, and I had heard them almost say like word for word what like teachers have said. And then it'd be repeated to me, and I've gone, oh, I remember this. And somehow it doesn't feel so personal then. And you have like scripts in your mind. It gives you a bit of strength for when you know, like if you do come across this, then you know, this isn't just me. This isn't my problem. This is a systemic problem. And it helps to take some of that personal out of it. And I hope that for anybody who's listening here who like is horrified, please don't be concerned that this is your experience. I actually went, obviously I went on a bit of a tirade after that, because I've also had parents who are there like crying to me because they've had these kind of experiences. So I felt very like mama bear for the other parents who are going through this. So I'd like gone through all of the things of like, doing the complaints procedure and writing up the reviews to make sure that everybody around knows what kind of a person this person is. And then, you know, put it onto the Facebook groups as like, you know, I need a local dentist who's good with PDA kids and the situation. And actually I had a lot of great responses of like recommendations for locally, like dentists that were great and they were understanding. And that like, even if they thought Oh my gosh, they just don't look after their teeth. It's not like as though they accuse them of abusing or neglecting their kids. Now, just to say, my dentist didn't accuse me of abusing or neglecting my kid. It was just that the tone indicated it. The content of his words indicated it. Like, if he comes at me with some kind of like a slander, no, I haven't. Yeah, no, just saying what happened.
All right. Well, thank you so much for sharing your story and journeys with PDA. Our mission is always community connection and co-regulation. And so we're just thank you for being part of that mission. And so thank you all for being here. Thank you for listening. And make sure to check out our website if you have questions or need help. And then that's all for today.